Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have back with us Dr. Amit Goswami, and he is here to talk about his DVD called The Quantum Activist. This film has been the winner of many Best Documentary awards, and I think it's an excellent presentation of what we know to date about the quantum field and how consciousness is the ground of all being, and how we, in the unconscious field of being, create our reality. And he explains many of the things that, many of the misconceptions of the past about creating consciously. And I'm very, very pleased to have him today. Welcome, Amit. Where are you calling from today?
Thank you, Susan. I'm calling from Eugene, Oregon today.
Okay, so you're in Oregon, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Great. Well, thanks for getting up a little early. I didn't know that you had this out, I guess the last time we talked, but it was, it did come out in 2009, is that right?
Yes, August 2009.
Would you like to tell our audience a little bit about I guess the audience probably knows that you were in a contributor to What the Bleep Do We Know, which was more of a basic presentation of quantum theory as relates to consciousness. And I assume this is a follow-up of that to present more complex principles of the same idea.
It's more than a follow-up. As you know, I mean, What the Bleep was had a story in it,
right?
And the interviews from the scientists were used to highlight some parts of the motif of the story.
Uh-huh.
So quantum physics was introduced, but unfortunately, many perceptive listeners and viewers complained that there were a lot of contradiction among the scientists and so forth. And of course, there's a subsequent movie called The Secret that came out, which presented some gross misrepresentation, although there were some good stuff in it, too. Mm-hmm. The idea of waiting is good. But it also created a lot of misconception based on a very popularized version of quantum physics that sounds good, that we create our own reality. But the truth is that we don't create our own reality in our ordinary ego consciousness. We create it from a non-ordinary state of consciousness, which is not easy to attain. And this is why our ordinary wishy-washy wishes don't come true, as everybody knows. It's very tempting to believe that it does if you really have a firm belief or something, but you can go on believing in your ego forever, and it just doesn't happen. I felt that was part of it. But, of course, there's a paradigm shift that is going on in science. That was the major motivation of this new documentary. It's not that I wanted to particularly point out the right way to interpret quantum physics, but it just so happens that if you do, then the whole paradigm of science based on scientific materialism, this idea that everything is made of matter and elementary particles, and their interactions are the only source of cause, that idea is disappearing. Instead, what is appearing is that consciousness is the ground of being, and we do have free will. Material interactions play their part. They produce the possibilities for consciousness to choose from, but it is consciousness which ultimately chooses. And not only chooses from matter, but there is also possibilities of mind, possibilities of vital energies, possibilities of even intuition or archetype. And we choose from all of them to create our experience, which has all these four different components, sensing, feeling, thinking, and intuition. So it's a much more complete theory of ourselves, to date the most complete theory of ourselves. And this is really what the documentary conveys to the viewer.
Well, you start out the quantum activist by talking about how you can have bridge the gap between God and science. Why don't we start there with you talking a little bit about why science, which is based on our current science, which is based on materialism, can be understood in the terms of what is presented in the quantum activist.
Yes. So the current science, as I said, holds that the elementary particles make up everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a paradox in that way of thinking if you use quantum physics. In quantum physics, all objects are possibilities. So
right.
What happens then in the reductionist view, elementary particles making atoms, but it's really possible elementary particles making possible atoms, making possible molecules, making possible neurons, making possible brain, making a possible consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
If you see that clearly, then it becomes also clear that a possible brain with a possible consciousness couldn't possibly look at possible elementary particles and get actualities, because
mm-hmm.
possibility interacting with possibility only can produce bigger possibility. This was a mathematical theorem that John von Neumann, a great mathematician, discoverer of the computer in the current form, proved, and that stands. So whatever models of conversion of possibility into actuality that the materialist physicists have concocted, they're just that, concoctions. They don't work.
Mm-hmm.
They violate this theorem, mathematical theorem of John von Neumann. So now only way to resolve this paradox is to posit that consciousness is the ground of being. The upward causation from elementary particle is complemented by downward causation from consciousness, which consists of conscious choice. We choose from the possibilities offered to consciousness by material bodies. And this choice then is called downward causation. So what is the consciousness that chooses? This is where
mm-hmm.
the crux is.
Right.
Consciousness in its non-locality, in its inseparate form, where all things are interconnected, that special state of consciousness is where choice takes place. But that is the state of consciousness that traditions, spiritual traditions, call God. So it is not a stretch to say that science has rediscovered God in the form of the source of downward causation that it takes to convert quantum waves of possibility into actual events of our experience.
So in the film, you talk about the components that are important when you are tapping into this field to consciously create. You give the example of having a problem to solve and then what flows from that. So just practically, if would you like to go through some of the components that we can do in order to increase the number of possibilities, and then the idea that we have to let it you need to back up. In the movie, you said that you need to sit on the egg for a while and let it.
Yes.
I like that one.
Yes.
But just
yes.
go through the
yes,
like
one.
from
well,
a personal
really
standpoint how we do it.
One really has to follow the
mm-hmm.
Stages of the creative process. This
right.
is what you're finding out.
That's right.
And creative process consists of preparation, some doing,
mm-hmm.
but then there is this mysterious stage called incubation.
Right.
What does it mean? Well, as you said, a bird sits on an egg doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basic spirit. So in that sense, what was emphasized in the movie The Secret is quite right. We have to wait. We have to learn to wait. This learning to wait is a big sign for creativity, a big sign of getting an entry point to this power of downward causation. Without it, we obviously cannot access downward causation. What does waiting do? Any wave spreads. So waves of possibility will spread if we
mm-hmm.
don't collapse them too prematurely, if we
right.
don't convert them into actuality. So we have to learn to wait, but if we wait too long, then of course we also lose track of what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
We lose the focus completely. So
mm-hmm.
what I found is that a judicious blend of doing and being is necessary. I call it the doobie-doobie-doo lifestyle.
Right.
So,
and that's very important. I mean, in terms of what I understand about more conscious creation. And by conscious,
yes.
we're not talking about ego creation. We're not talking about
no.
the separated self creating. No. I guess the
There's
best example.
The unitive consciousness, the collective one consciousness that connects all of us, that creates.
Right. The best example is to take some sort of a problem, like Einstein was, you know, when he came up with E equals MC squared or some other problem that you don't have the solution to. And so you formulate the question, and then you get it very, you concentrate to get it very, very specific so you know exactly what you're trying to bring in. And it doesn't have to be a mathematical formula. It can be, you know, like what we work on is information to help people recover from cancer. You know, I mean, any problem that we have. Right now we should all be concentrating on what to do, you know, to help that oil spill in the Gulf, because obviously that's a threat. But you have a problem, and then you focus on the problem, and then you kind of release it. And I know Einstein used to take naps where he would release it and probably go into the collective unconscious to find the solution.
Yeah, basically that.
Yeah.
And we are finding out is that one can make this part of a lifestyle. In fact, spiritual traditions, what they do is that they do meditation.
Right.
So in between work, if you do meditation, then mind slows down.
Right.
And in that process, a gap between thoughts can develop in which unconscious processing, this processing of possibilities from a bigger and bigger pool of possibilities take place. So this making a bigger pool of possibilities to choose from is very important to the creative process. And then what happens is that when the right possibility appears in the pool, because possibilities are always interacting with possibilities, producing new possibilities. The more time you give them, the more new possibilities will appear. And when the correct new one that will solve your problem appears, then consciousness can choose it, and that is the moment of insight. It always comes with a surprise.
Right.
The problem you started from finds an answer, but the answer comes in from such a direction that you didn't expect. This is why creative insights are called aha experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That aha moment is the moment of a quantum leap, where a thought is produced without going through the algorithms. It's not a continuous process of thought. It's really a discontinuous insight, a quantum leap. When an electron jumps from one atomic orbit to another, it does not go through the intervening space. The quantum leap of thought is similar to that. And then the fourth stage of the process is called manifestation, where you take the insight and then make a scientific law like E equals MC squared out of it. The insight that Einstein had was time is relative.
Mm-hmm.
But from that, he solved the problem that he had. And out of that solution came the law, E equals MC squared. So this is quite general. It's not just for science. It's for arts. It's for music.
Mm-hmm.
It's for
environmental problems.
Culture. Environmental
problems. For any
problems,
problem.
Yes.
Any problem
yes.
we have.
Yeah,
that's
for
an
any problem. Yes.
And it seems now that we have kind of God's turned up all of the volumes. You know, we have more economic problems, we have more environmental problems, we have more, you know, stabilization of the earth problems with all the earthquakes and volcanoes. So it seems that we're getting more opportunities to bring in solutions to pretty serious problems. And I think as the problems manifest, we really are realizing that we are not, none of us are islands. The economic thing is affecting all of us. The oil spill in the Gulf is, I mean, they're talking about having to evacuate Florida for, I mean, that's incredible. And,
the crisis. You notice
it's
that
a crisis,
the appearance of crisis is a signature of massive en masse creativity, because only by en masse creativity can we find solutions to such crisis conditions. Without a crisis, we are unable to get off our asses. You know, it's just
that's
fact.
Right.
We don't seem to feel the urgency. Some people
right.
do. They are the Einsteins among us.
Right.
But most of us are kind of lazy in terms of getting our creative juices flowing. But a crisis condition will get everybody's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So consciousness, I suppose, creates crisis for this reason. And, you know, it's an opportunity for all of us to wake up and be creative.
So tell me a little bit about the intent behind the quantum activist, because at the end, you kind of give everybody an opportunity to, you know, participate in this collective unconsciousness. And I assume that was the entire, or the main point of making the film, is to let people know that what they can do, you know, that they can become the quantum activist.
Yes, indeed, I define quantum activism as the idea of transforming self and society using the quantum principles. So you have these quantum principles of that come with downward causation. One is non-locality, which means signal-less communication. The another is discontinuity, quantum leaps that I already have explained, a discontinuous a leap in thought without any algorithmic component of it. There is no continuity of thought that produced the creative insight. It's discontinuous. So that is a characteristic. And the third one is an essential component of how we get self-reference. We have this capacity of self separate from others, subject separate from objects, this sense that we get in our experience that we are looking at objects that are separate from us. This idea of separateness, self-reference, the technical name, comes from a tangling up or entanglement of the hierarchies. Usually we are used to simple hierarchies, you know, I command, you obey, or you command, I obey. Mm-hmm. But in tangled hierarchy, both of us command and both of us obey. Mm-hmm. So that tangle produces this isolation, that apparent isolation, that enables one part to say that I am the subject and I am experiencing the other part as an object. So those are the three principles. And if those three principles are used judiciously, we talked about creativity, that do we do lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Non-locality is achieved by collectively working together. Meditation, transformation, if those journeys are taken up collectively, then we get into, fall into this non-local consciousness. Like Jesus said, when through two or more are there in my name, there I am in the midst of them. So that kind of thing. A mass collectivity takes place when we engage in intending and meditating together. And tangled hierarchical relationship is a little more involved, but only a little more. We have to work within our intimate relationships and go from the simple hierarchy that dominates such relationships into a tangle. And we are doing that. Ever since women's liberation in the last century, we have been steadfastly getting into more and more intimate relationships where men and women are equal partners, not like the previous relationships which were dominated by men. So in this way, there is now an awareness that we need to be collective, non-local. We need to value discontinuity, and we need to bring tangled hierarchy in our relationships. So what I suggest is that we become a community of people who are aware of these principles and start practicing them in their life. If that happens, and if we do it collectively with the help of the internet, for example, then transformation, planetary transformation, will happen much quicker. We need to change. There is no question. We need to solve these problems that you mentioned: global warming, terrorism, economic meltdown, breakdown of democracy, healthcare problems. These problems are all collective problems. We cannot solve them individually. They are not problems of individual solution. You know, what is happening in the Mexican Gulf is not an individual problem. It's problem of the whole ecosystem. We have to recognize it and seek a solution with collective creativity. It takes more than an individual's creativity to find solutions for such massive problems.
Yeah, and we need to recognize that the multinational corporations that have been so powerful, that they are not at the top of the hierarchy. Really, the good of the planet, because we have to survive on the planet, is at the top of the hierarchy. And so you see this what you're talking about, the more entanglement of the hierarchy, because
yes.
no longer is that corporation going to dictate everything. I mean, I think the people are stepping in and saying, no, you know, you can't just let BP handle this. You have to, you know, they're not handling it. You need to do something else. At least that was what was on CNN last night. That's intelligent,
yeah.
you know. I mean, it's...
Yes, but, you know, the tendency is still to depend on simple hierarchies. For example,
yeah.
the other network, Fox Network, constantly
uh-huh.
Blaming the Obama administration for it. And the rationale for that comes from the fact that somebody got to be blamed, and it
right,
got to
yeah,
be the top
yeah.
of the simple hierarchy once again.
Right,
so it's
right.
either BP who has to be blamed, or it's the Obama government who has to be blamed. We just don't realize that it's our collective problem. This problem that is showing up, of course, the instrument is BP, no question, and let them pay some money for repairing
mm-hmm.
as much as possible. But the point is that this crisis would have happened anyway. The problem is that
yeah,
we are you know,
yeah.
overly dependent on oil,
mm-hmm.
and the oil has to be found somewhere, and we are constantly faced with choices that are very dangerous choices. This was a dangerous choice,
mm-hmm.
however you put it, and this is not a very good idea to dig at 5,000 feet under the water, because control is gone. It's very
right.
difficult, if anything goes wrong, to
mm-hmm.
fix it. And this is what we are finding.
Yeah.
So such risks should not be taken with our environment. That is just plain fact. And one
yeah.
would hope that we'll learn from it. But how would we learn if the people don't take part in the debate,
mm-hmm.
not in the blame-fixing game? That game is important, of course, to some extent, because we got to have the money to spend right now to come out of the disaster. But much more important is the long-term lesson that we learn from it. We got to
right.
learn that we got to lessen our dependence on oil so that we don't have to go and destroy our environment to find the oil.
Mm-hmm.
This is most important.
Yeah, one of my friends has a brother who works for BP, and he was saying that, you know, basically, these valves are only good for certain amounts of pressure, and if you hit a well with more pressure, they're going to fail, you know, and
yeah.
they just hit a well that had, you know, more pressure than they anticipated. And it's like you say, it is a risky business, and one
yeah.
where they didn't have a lot of parachutes, you know, or, you know, golden parachutes to you know, to figure out how they're going to stop a problem. A lack of problem solving, really. I mean, in surgery, we have contingency plans. You know, if something goes, if
yeah.
this happens and we do this,
yeah.
and we're trained in doing that. But, you know, the oil business is a speculative business. It's one where they take great risk and don't have a lot of, you know, parachutes. And I think...
And what you have to understand is that this idea that technology can solve every problem, this idea got to go. The limits of this idea are already confronting us. And
right.
we have to recognize that some of these problems cannot be solved by material technology. In
mm-hmm.
fact, we are at the threshold of how far we can go with the material level of expansion of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
We have to become aware that we have to bring in the subtle levels of our existence, the
mm-hmm.
mental and the vital energies, and pay attention to those levels to help our economy. When we do that, then our attention will go away from this material level of prosperity that
mm-hmm.
we are counting on so much, because if we don't expand, our economy stagnates in the material dimension. But why can't we expand in the mental and vital energy dimensions, in thinking and feeling, let alone intuition? We can even bring that up. That will enhance creativity, and things will
mm-hmm.
be so much better because people will really go directly for the things that they covet, which is meaning processing, finding meaning of their lives, and the values
mm-hmm.
like love and appreciation of beauty and being good to each other. You know, these are the things that we ultimately covet, or justice for everyone. But, you know, we have just, under the spell of scientific materialism, we have lost our values and goals and the idea that we are really meaning-processing beings. We don't really care that much about material levels of prosperity. I mean, sure, we want a warm house. Sure, we want food on our table.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, very quickly, this material need is satisfied, as Maslow recognized long time ago. Right? So then we can look at the higher needs and need for fulfilling our need for meaning processing, which we do by thinking, and especially feeling. This feeling
mm-hmm.
dimension we have been ignoring a lot. And we have to bring that back up, and we need to really get into feeling and intuition, the ignored aspects of our consciousness.
Yeah, you're probably aware of Greg Braden's work, The Isaiah Effect, where he gleaned out of the Isaiah prophecy the importance of feeling in manifestation and creation.
And then
you know, went and, to the Tibetan Tibet, to Buddhism, and to other religious traditions to find the same pattern of knowledge. It's actually ancient wisdom, but
yeah,
you're right. We've lost the feeling in our current materialistic world, and that's one of the most important ingredients in creation is the feeling ingredient.
Yes, what happens is that when we create a science which has blind spots, current
mm-hmm.
biology has a blind spot, which is that it does not have any mechanism for explaining feeling. Only thing one can say is that maybe somehow evolution produced it because feeling may have a survival value. But because there is no straightforward biology of feeling, what is the mechanism for it?
Mm-hmm.
Biologists, based on scientific materialism, cannot figure this out. Therefore, they ignore feeling. Feeling is not important. It's an epiphenomenon
mm-hmm.
of matter. These are the kinds of ideas that are slowly but surely destroying our culture. What happens when you have the wrong worldview, the wrong way of thinking, is that without being aware of it, we all get into believing some things, but that without being aware of it is the crucial point. Like today, everybody talks about free will, responsibility, and all this. But underneath, they also believe in scientific materialism, that there really isn't any free will because everything is determined by elementary particles and their interactions.
Mm-hmm.
That teaching eats away at the idea of free will. So whenever it suits you, you find, well, I'm not responsible. It's all the elementary particles in my body that's doing it. The genes
right.
are doing it.
Right.
So you have a escape hatch built into it, so nobody
mm-hmm.
takes responsibility. Is the Gulf executives who boompas all these ideas that they can dig that deep and safely without any safeguard backup systems, etc. Do they feel repentant for their mistake? No. Did the people who produced this calamity economic meltdown a couple of years ago, do they feel repentant for their mistake? In the olden days, they would be very saddened with guilt. Today,
mm-hmm.
no guilt. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because in their heart, they already have accepted the fact that they are made of matter and elementary particles are doing
mm-hmm.
it all, are their genes. And they are not responsible. This lack of responsibility is the one curse that the materialist worldview has given us. But in truth, materialist worldview is just simply skewed. It's just wrong. It's one-sided. It's incomplete. When you complete it, you find that, yes, you have free will, and you got to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And without responsibility, we cannot obviously run these systems, democracy and capitalism. These systems depend on our taking responsibility.
Yeah, they certainly do. One of the things that I think is important also, you mention it in The Quantum Activist, but it's very important not to limit the possibilities coming forth. One of the possibilities that we see in medicine, in fact, I'm looking at the book right now called Spontaneous Remission, the 100 collected cases that Noetic Science put together. It's very important to not limit what is possible, because that way all these other possibilities can come in. People have to understand that with your mind, you can decide what will not happen because of your belief systems. And I believe
yeah.
that the people who have been able to participate in spontaneous remissions did not have that rigid thinking that these so-called miracles were not possible.
Right, exactly. That is most
yeah.
important. In
yeah.
fact, you know, this is the I was talking about the curse of scientific materialism.
Mm-hmm.
This is one curse of scientific materialism also, because it says that everything is determined already. There are no possibilities for us
mm-hmm.
to choose, because it's already chosen by physical laws and stuff. And then that limitation is the one of the most taking away our choice that
mm-hmm.
makes us powerless. Instead, we do have the power. We do have the power to choose. As soon as you hear that, this is why quantum physics, you know, that line that I uttered in What the Brief, many people have told me that
mm-hmm.
that is the great liberating line. Quantum physics is the physics of possibilities. As soon as you hear that, you become aware that, oh, I can heal myself. I can choose the healing possibility instead of the
mm-hmm.
possibility of disease that has attacked me. So, you know, this empowering is the biggest gift of quantum physics, the empowering that we feel in every field. Health is one of my favorite fields of application. I work a lot with, how a new quantum integrative medicine and healthcare management can be developed on these ideas. You know, people talk about the cost of healthcare. This cost can be minimized when you start working in the spirit of the new science, science based on the primacy of consciousness, because A, we have free will, and B, we bring in the idea of alternative medicine, and now on a solid scientific worldview, because mind and vital energies both are given validity in the new view. There are also possibilities for consciousness to choose from. So we can then validate medicine at the vital level, which is what Ayurveda, traditional Chinese medicine, homeopathy, those systems do. And we can also recognize the validity of mind-body healing, like the spontaneous healing as quantum leaps of consciousness. So we are beginning to understand the entire revolution that is going on in the field of medicine and psychology in the new view. So this is one of the greatest forefront of new science and new technology.
Well, when I was, I think, a third-year general surgery resident, I had an opportunity to, I guess consciousness gave me the opportunity to experience something that then later on when I interviewed, you know, we've interviewed, done these interviews at least 6 times, and I've read all your material, and it's your material that helped explain what I experienced then. I was taking a 23-year-old man to surgery who had had a lymphoma in his chest. He'd had surgery on the chest, so they had like clips there, but he had a recurrence in his abdomen, and it was a big recurrence. It was bigger than a grapefruit. And we cut him open at 7 in the morning, and when I went in, I couldn't find the tumor. The tumor was completely gone. So I called radiology, and of course radiology wasn't in because they don't get in until 9. Anyway, I closed him up, and I went outside, and I talked to his parents, and I said, you know, that, you know, the good news was we hadn't found any tumors, but the bad news is that he'd had a surgery. And later on, when I was reviewing the films with radiology, we knew it was him because of the metal clips in his chest produced the characteristic sunburst pattern. So within a week, between the CAT scan and the surgery, a giant tumor disappeared. And of course, this, you know, I was trained at Hopkins and Washington University in scientific materialism, obviously. And more recently, we had a similar thing happen, a similar sized tumor documented on CAT scan. And, the radiologist and a surgeon at Emory said this is definitely an hepatocellular carcinoma. And then within a couple of weeks, a repeat test showed no evidence of anything. So I will tell you that I know that these occur because they've occurred in my consciousness field, and your material really helps me understand what's going on and consciousness can choose to probably within seconds, just like you say that electron goes from one quantum state to another without actually transversing the physical state. I believe these tumors pop out of existence in the same instant.
Yeah, a little bit more body could be given to how you described it, but it's basically the truth. What happens is often these cancers are a result of a big breakdown at the mental level. We have a faulty mm-hmm. belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So that faulty belief system is removed in an instant. That's a quantum mm-hmm. leap, discontinuous in an instant, spontaneously.
Right, because it's thought.
The rest of it is a little bit slower, but only a little bit, which is that the immune system, it unblocks the immune system, unblocks
mm-hmm.
the action of the immune system through the working of the heart chakra. Basically love. So then the immune system becomes active, and that immune system becomes active with such gusto because it's it was dormant
mm-hmm.
for a while, and then suddenly it comes into activity. That sudden coming into activity produces such a force that
mm-hmm.
Tumors can be destroyed overnight, or at most taking a few days. That's what you observed, and this is what people repeatedly observe: this overnight vanishing of the cancer, or as you said, 2-3 hours at the most, sometimes,
mm-hmm.
Which is just a spectacular success of this idea of quantum leap of healing of the mind, and that transferring the healing to the vital and eventually to the physical.
Did you ever see the film that the ultrasound? Film that Greg Braden discovered that was done in a hospital in China where 3 Qigong masters were chanting while the ultrasonic probe was held over this woman's bladder tumor. And within less than 3 minutes, that tumor shrunk to nothing. And they were chanting, already gone, already gone, already gone, or something to that effect. And you saw the tumor, you know, the ultrasound, just the tumor just disappeared. And
just
that was within 3 minutes. And so I was just like, that's the best proof I've seen that our, what we see, you know, our manifested reality is actually only
yeah,
an effect of a higher cause.
Yes. These Qigong masters are very spectacular. My personal doctor, he described to me, this was a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
that how he got convinced that this vital energy dimension is powerful in spite of scientific materialism that he believed as a professional, is when he saw his Aikido master, somebody got a wound on the head, and he just focused his ki on the person, and
mm-hmm.
the gushing blood stopped just before his eyes. And how can
mm-hmm.
one disbelieve if one sees such an occasion, such an instance of healing, spontaneous instant of healing? So this is, of course, these powers are very special, and
mm-hmm.
the way that they come into the action is we have much to learn from it. We cannot do it by wishing it. We can only do it through downward causation at a level of consciousness that these masters know how to access. And this is what we have to learn. Our new medical professions, you know, in if we are to be successful in quantum integrative medicine with a lot of instances of this, what Deepak Chopra calls quantum healing,
mm-hmm.
then we got to learn to access this dimension better and better. Creative people know this already. So I was going through that doobie-doobie-doo. We
mm-hmm.
need that kind of practice en masse. We need many, many people to accept that as the lifestyle. Then gradually we'll relax into such a consciousness which can be in ego, most of the time can be in this collective consciousness, this non-local consciousness some of the time. And it is those some of the time then we can fly, we can do anything, we can convert possibilities, healing possibilities all over the planet and manifest the good stuff that we want, that we need.
Yeah, some of the cases in the spontaneous remission collection aren't just tumors disappearing or infections healing. They're actually restructuring of bone and other things that we consider quite dense. And it may be
yeah,
that we can bring these patterns in to restructure organs, bones, even regrow limbs.
This restructuring of bones is a very interesting thing that happens. I'm aware of some of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, it requires a creativity in the vital energy level. Rupert
mm-hmm.
Sheldrake has shown this is a major development of biology, which most biologists, of course, still refuse to believe. But he has shown that the form making, biological forms such as bone structure and joints and all that, form is built with the help of morphogenetic fields. These are non-local and non-physical fields that comprise the vital body, what traditionally we call the vital body. It's the movement of these morphogenetic fields that we feel as our feeling. That's where the feeling comes from. It's the movement of morphogenetic fields, not movement of matter, that we feel. Mm-hmm. Movement of matter is associated with it. So what basically then transpires is that with age, especially, a particular bone joint that becomes subject to too much wear and tear loses the cartilage, and then bone starts rubbing on bones, and this is why we get bone disease, pain, etc. Mm-hmm. But there is no really healing of this unless you produce a new system altogether, which will have that original cartilage and stuff. There's no physical way of doing this. You know, gene therapy sometimes is mentioned, but gene therapy is an abysmal failure. So how to do this? You cannot do this with just adjusting the morphogenetic fields a little bit. That is what traditional vital body medicine practices do, including acupuncture. Mm-hmm. So you have to do something really creative. And this spontaneous healing is where somehow, I mean, these people are not doing it consciously, but somehow that creative change in the vital dimension is taking place. Ordinary creativity is mental creativity. This is really very heartening because we are already advancing towards creativity in the vital energies. We are really becoming creative in the dimension of feeling.
Right.
So this, you know, there is that one case which I saw reported in a book, a little boy who lost his leg. He was able to regenerate his leg. And that is another spectacular example of using creativity at the level of the morphogenetic fields.
Well, Jesus said, I and my Father are one. And I think that that holds a key in what we're talking about here. Father being the void, the sea of all possibilities, the, you know, what you call consciousness, the ground of all being. If you can learn through an altered state of consciousness or a collective state of consciousness, it seems to be a little bit easier when a group of people are doing it, as is explained, that would make sense. So if you can access the Father or the ground of all being and somehow have that, I guess, the morphogenic... From that, the morphogenic fields superimposed on the disease fields, then the healthy fields will dominate, evidently.
Our healthy fields will come into action.
Right.
They are potentially always there, but we are not choosing them. So the capacity to choose go up when we are in collective unconscious. And then that collective force of choice will choose the new morphogenetic field instead of the morphogenetic fields that are now helpless because the material objects that are correlated with it have gone awry. We just really have to bring about a new morphogenetic field to in order to create a new restructuring of the diseased body parts. And so this level of creativity will be much helped if we do it in relationship, if we do it with other people. In the documentary, I talk about this a lot. Conflicts between people, you know, usually you look upon conflicts as something to be avoided. But conflicts between intimate people is a very good vehicle for making use of the collective consciousness of both people in the relationship. If we can keep conflicts without resolving them, suffering from the conflicts but enduring it, without resolving them with rational reasoning, instead wait for the quantum leap to take place, then what happens is that new possibilities are created. And very poetically, literally, whenever there are new possibilities in our unconscious, God comes, because ego cannot process new possibilities. So God has to come. So that is a surefire way of inviting God in our midst. and God settles the conflict, and we get the creative insight, and that is the way to one great way to access this quantum consciousness, God, non-local consciousness, as you said, ground of being. Any name we can give it, but the point is to access this downward causation, and we can access it much better in relationship, because a consciousness, non-local consciousness is already present in a certain way, whereas individuality, to give up individuality by our own effort sometimes is more difficult. Mm-hmm. But in relationship, it's a little bit more easy. So we have to learn to cooperate on planet-wide in such a way that we cooperate with each other and access this non-local level of consciousness much more easily. I think that this can happen now because internet is connecting us locally. That can trigger us to fall into this non-local consciousness, which is already potential. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we have to concoct. It's already potential in us. It's mm-hmm. just that we don't access it because we get caught in the individual melodrama. But mm-hmm. if you can suspend the individual melodrama and then develop collective actions throughout the planet, collective movements, mm-hmm. and I hope quantum activism becomes a collective movement for us, then we access this non-local consciousness, and from that power of downward causation, we can solve any problem. There is no possibilities which are excluded in principle, and there is the power of this new view.
And the more people that get together and bring this into being, the easier it is for the rest of us to do this. So. That's what's happening. I mean, we are really bringing this into consciousness as a possibility in mass, and the more the people are aware that this is possible, then the easier it will be to do this. Kind of like the 4-minute mile. You know, it took forever for the first person to run the 4-minute mile, but once they did, then a lot of people were able to do it. And that's what's exciting, yeah. And that's why this is growing, and I think the tipping point will probably be around 2012. Would you like to give some contact information for the quantum activist and your other work?
Yes, of course. Anybody can access me through my website, which is Amit Goswami, AmitGoswami.org. And if you want more information about the documentary, it's quantumactivist.com, quantumactivist, one word, .com. And what else? And you have, there is an email, info@amitgoswami.org, that will enable you to write me an email that I will get, and I will attend eventually. It takes me a little bit sometimes, but eventually I answer most emails. I invite every listener, if you are so moved, join the movement of quantum activism, contribute to the planetary and personal transformation. It is the only thing to do, you know, the only game in town.
Important stuff. No kidding, especially with all the crises that we have. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Amit. It was a wonderful discussion, as usual, and I look forward to speaking to you again. Next week, we're going to have Paul Rodenmacher on, A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed. And then on the 5th of June, Dr. Norm Shealy will be back, talking about his book, To Be Released, Medical Intuition, A Science of the Soul. And then Dr. Benor back on the 12th, Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing. And on the 19th, we are doing two books, Telementation and Talking to Myself. And then we will be looking again at Morgellon Syndrome on the 26th. On the there's a wellness event at the center Thursday, June 10th. And Noetic Science will be given by Dr. Mike Greenberg, talking about a lifetime of therapy in one evening. I guess Dr. Mike is doing quantum healing of the mind in one hour. That would be great, wouldn't it? Well, thank you very much, Amit. I look forward to talking to you again. I'm sure
okay.
we'll have you back for one of your other great works that's coming out. And this is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health. We'll see you next week.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677.